All right, Gary, what are we playing this week?
Well, Cole, I went out and got us DNA test.
Ooh, scammy.
It's extremely scammy. I also named a star after a duck feed, and we are lords in Scotland.
Nice. Yeah.
Because we own a square foot of land. Hmm. Just did all the scams and flams.
Yeah.
The reason why I did this is because I wanted to see what our children, you know, our progeny would do with duck feed.
Okay. Like
duck feed babies.
And do they have markers for podcasting?
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. What the hell? What? Huh?
Yeah, of course they do. Yeah. So we'll use this this DNA thing here, and we'll turn on the game computer so it listens to us.
Okay.
You know, because that's part of the whole thing. And I'm going to plug in some numbers here, like do it here, and let's see what happens with Duck Feed the Next Generation.
Oh.
Hey, Cole. It's me, Gary Jr.
Hi, I'm Gary Jr. as well.
Hey, that boy was lying about his fecundity, our dad. Where's the... Oh, there's a couple of Cole Jr.'s over there.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want to go play Silent Hill 5?
Silent Hill 5 is terrible. Well, it's not terrible, but it's a pale imitator.
Yeah, I'd agree. No, as a young Gary, the Next Generation, I care less about that, more about Divinity Original Sin 3.
Mm.
Yeah, let's all go be Duck Feed the Next Generation.
Yeah, let's do. Oh, wait, game computer.
A little lost.
Yeah.
That's all I had. It wasn't so much a randomization. I just wanted to pretend to be our sons.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was a little bit slow on the uptake on that.
No, you weren't. You were doing fine. It was my fault for not coming up with a randomization. Like, I just decided not to because I wanted to talk about this thing. Yeah. And I wanted to read the intro that I have for this episode because I found a good one that I missed.
Okay.
This is Gary Butterfield.
This is Cole Ross.
And this is Abject Suffering, and it's poop past PP o'clock. Really like that.
It's fun to be a child. I like that. Yeah.
it's poop past PP o'clock. Yeah, love it.
Yeah. This week we're talking about Star Trek, The Next Generation, Futures Past for the SNES. At least I believe that's mm-hmm. what we are. That's the only Next Generation game I could find for the SNES. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to, this is a Gary pick.
Mm-hmm.
Two things. One, this was a game I rented over and over as a child and never got.
Okay.
So I wanted an excuse to like play it again. And then two, we hadn't talked about Star Trek in a while.
True.
And I was thinking about Star Trek The Next Generation recently.
Yeah.
And wanted to talk about it. So that's really all I had. Yeah. It's a real fucking weird game, though.
It is. I normally associate something this, you know, PC style with the Genesis when mm-hmm. it comes to the 16-bit consoles or whatever. Boy, was I disappointed when I got to the away team section. I was like, oh, this is dog shit.
It's a little like the old Ghostbusters arcade game from Hell, but like really shitty.
Yes.
Yeah, it's real bad. And the ship-to-ship combat is also not good.
It's a little bit better. I mean, at least that, like, it is, you know, just asteroids or starflight kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit better. It's just the whole point of this game, the reason why this was so hard to understand as a kid is because it's a bunch of just little games stuck right. together. Like, a Star Trek game is difficult to do.
Yeah.
Because Star Trek is a mix of things. It's not a very video game like show.
Mm-hmm.
So this just kind of tries to emulate all the different versions of it, like all the hot diplomacy action. Like you spend a lot of time with the droll thrills of like using the communicator and doing briefings
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And then a shitty overhead shooting segment through the away team. And then like a fairly shitty dogfighting section. is the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of the centerpiece and a thing that I think would make this like really pop, like in back of the box or magazine screenshots, is that, you know, you are on the bridge, in between these other game types, right? So you kind of rotate around and you get this rotating view of the different stations on the bridge and these really just big sprite, high detail versions of your favorite, next generation characters,
at their, great.
Oh yeah. Like this is a, when you're on the bridge, this is a really good looking game.
Yeah. Only then though.
Yeah.
Everybody walks on the away team. Everybody walks like Robobo. Why is walk? Always got to take a dump. Yeah, everyone is like kind of holding, like squeezing it in.
And you can make a sprite as detailed as you want, as long as you don't have to animate it. So
very different skills.
Yeah.
On the bridge, being able to like check in on these different stations and stuff gives this like a feeling of being a very free game. When it's not,
it's real procedural. That's what was like,
yeah, absolutely. Like I was 14, you know, when this came out, rented it a bunch, because I love Star Trek, and was very confused by it, but that was what kept me coming back.
Yeah.
This like idea of being like, oh, I'm like an enterprise simulator is what I wanted.
Yeah.
With like a procedural, you know, a galaxy full of quests that I could stumble upon, not a linear game that has the flavor of a simulator.
Yes.
To it a little bit.
Yeah. No, it's like I can see the illusion being really strong, right?
Yes.
That to me, I think would be the big selling point, especially if I was a fan of the series. Also, it feels like a pretty mature game, actually. You know, like, and if I was 14 and I rolled up to this thinking like, oh yeah, this is kind of sophisticated. Like this feels, you know, a little bit like the, you know, an episode of the show that deals with these, you know, high-handed concepts and all of that, bouncing back and forth and doing enterprise bridge type stuff, would feel, you know, that would loom kind of larger in my mind than the crappy mini games. Right. Just like, you know, it kind of doesn't matter that the away team is just a, you know, a really, really bad top-down shooter because I'm doing, you know, I'm the captain, baby. I'm Picard.
Yeah. It's it does a good job of that.
Yeah.
You know, and the weirdly, the Game Boy port of this game kind of is closer to the thing that I wanted.
Oh yeah.
Which I didn't know at the time. I was just doing research on this, but is like Picard giving you semi-random missions that you go in and achieve through managing the bridge or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of your enterprise. When you say this is mature, that is the thing that I wanted to make hay out of in this was just, I'm coming to this realization of exactly how like adult contemporary and bland the Next Generation is, despite how much I love it. And I was having the realization, nobody on the Next Generation is cool. Not one motherfucker on this thing is cool. It is like the most grown-up set of grown-ups.
Yeah, yeah.
That I've ever been. Like Worf, the badass warrior.
Uh-huh.
Every time they come to him, he's just kind of like, well, I don't know about that. That's not how we'd do it. And then nothing happens.
Uh-huh.
Like there's no conflict. I've been thinking about this while I'm watching Better Call Saul, which is a show with drama and conflict.
Uh-huh.
Which this show only kind of has.
A little bit.
A lot of friends being gentle with each other and everyone just being like real stiff and weird.
Yeah. Everybody is universally shitting on Wesley though. So,
Wesley sucks more than most of them.
Right. So, you know, Wesley is the Jerry if there's a Parks and Rec, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a way that I think that Star Trek Next Generation is really ahead of its time with me.
Uh-huh.
Because now I really love that lack of razzle dazzle.
Yeah.
Like the blandness that, you know, we'll have to see about protocol, you know, exciting protocol action and stuff in this show is very exciting to me. And the dorky, stodgy pace is incredible. I know I've talked about that before.
No.
I've been thinking about it a lot because
it's
great.
It's one of those things, you know, I have not seen very much Star Trek The Next Generation. Most of what I have is cultural osmosis, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen stuff and I like know the characters and things. I've also never seen a lot of the original series, but like from afar, my respect for it has been a, the, you know, kind of genuine utopia that is built around it, but also
yes.
the fact that like what I understand of the best episodes is that it like the space stuff kind of goes away to a certain degree and it becomes like a really tense submarine movie, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of thing where like there is like international intrigue and it is these very competent people in a situation with limited kind of information about what's going on, trying very hard not to turn a powder keg into a flashpoint, right?
It's that, but not nearly as well as that gets doubled down on Deep Space Nine.
Right.
You know, it's that, but not really serialized.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like elements of that at its best, but a lot of times it's just monster of the week. Like here's a virus that turns us into children.
Yeah.
You know, just random nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
That's at its best though. The utopianism is real.
Yes.
That is a very sweet thing. It's a very progressive show.
Yeah. No.
In there, even though in this you just go down and just shoot Romulans
yeah. over and over. You're in the neutral zone. So if you see a Romulan, it's shoot on sight.
Yeah, they got to go. I love how the game ended up being like the criticism of this at the time was that it's slow paced and boring. it's so of Star Trek.
Yeah, it's kind of like what did you expect? Like, this isn't Star Wars. This is not supposed to be like a Kurosawa adaptation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's the most, it's so stolid. I just love it. And I love how many stories there were of Data. You know, the robot man,
mm-hmm.
There'd be a whole like D or E plot of Data, like getting into crocheting or something.
Uh huh.
And then all of his friends, every time just kind of like, all right, show us your crocheting. And then he would do it and he would crochet something like perfectly, but very bland. And then they'd be like, ugh. Everyone just rolling their eyes and pretending to go to sleep and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and it just kept happening. It's so fucking weird.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it so much.
It's like, why are you guys constantly dunking on this fucking biotechnological miracle that is happening yep. right here in front of you? Like, it should be a joy. Like, he's trying to be a real boy. He just wants to be a real boy so bad.
And they hate it. Everybody, Riker and Worf sighing whenever they see some of Data trying to do something. And everybody getting exasperated trying to explain things to him.
I mean, Data is tedious, right? But like only marginally more tedious than everybody else.
That's the thing. Like, yeah. I think that Data would really, like, Spock stood out on Star Trek because everybody was this hot-blooded maniac on that. Here, everyone's a Data. Like, Riker's maybe 10% less Data.
Uh-huh.
Like, he gets to go down to the planet of ladies and have sex with them.
Right.
But he's still a real stodgy dork.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's all stodgy dorks.
Yeah.
Not so much. That's really good. The what would you do, let's say you get a holodeck. What are you doing in that holodeck, man?
I don't know, honestly. Because time passes. Okay. Again, I'm revealing my ignorance here. Time passes regularly outside of the holodeck, right?
Yes. It is not a time thing. It's hard light illusions.
Hard basically. Light illusions. You know, I
don't know if that's actually what it is. That's what it is in the Danger Room.
Yeah.
And they're very similar.
Okay. But it's, you know, it's not magical. It is, you're just in this thing that can simulate locations and people and stuff.
Yes, but it's not just VR. Like, you can touch things.
Yes.
In the holodeck. And you can move around. Like, I guess the floor moves around so you can walk in place.
I know that there are episodes where it becomes real and Riker gets it with paternity suits, but,
yes. sometimes, and a lot of times, in the show, they only go to Earth media that we would understand as an audience.
Right.
That's in the public domain.
Yeah, so you get Picard like just leaning on Patrick Stewart being a Shakespearean actor, Picard putting himself into Othello or whatever, right?
There's a little bit of that. It's mostly going back to fight Moriarty
okay.
from Sherlock Holmes or mm-hmm. to go back and be Robin Hood's.
Yes.
And then sometimes Picard also likes being a detective. like a hard-boiled detective. Those are the three main things that people do on the show. But don't let that limit you, because those are, the blandest fantasies ever.
Yeah, I do like Picard just loving to play pretend.
Oh, it's fucking cute as hell. I don't know how anybody does anything else.
That's the thing, right? Holodeck. I mean, kind of like in Shadowrun, I don't understand how anybody is not Simmy Kimmy, right? Just doing BTLs addict all the time. Yeah.
Literally better than life. Put me in the joy can.
Yeah. I mean, I think Picard has the right idea. Like treat it like VR, treat it like games, you know, put yourself like in really intricate, like puzzle solving escape room kind of stuff. Load up, you know, whatever the equivalent of like a D&D kind of thing is, especially if it can't hurt you, you know, or mortally wound you. Yeah.
The safety protocols on the holodeck are turned off about half the time.
Well, there's your problem.
It feels like, it's not meant to be able to hurt you, but I'd say about half the times it shows up, it can.
Okay.
So they're still working the bugs out of the holodeck.
I mean, I can ride a car with a seatbelt on, you know. True. I often choose.
Like a pussy. I got you.
Yeah. Well, how about you, Smarty Pants? What would you do?
Oh, I probably pretend to be in Robin Hood. No, I don't know. If I had one now, I might pretend to be on Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Just for irony. If I were on the Enterprise, I always get the sense that like everyone there really hates their job and they have to work all the time.
Right. Yeah.
So it's really hard to get holodeck time and like you had to book it.
Yeah.
And stuff. I'd probably do D&D, or I would play, I want to say like video game stuff, but too many video games I like involve being athletic in a way that I can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to, like, the second I'm trying to do an immersive sim in the holodeck and I have to actually physically mantle something.
Yeah. Hoist yourself
up. I got
up
one of those in me about once a day. You know?
But that's the thing. Like, I could see the holodeck actually being a fun way to, like, you know, learn a skill. Right. You know, even if it's just something as simple as like, okay, this is a nature walk and I'm going to like take this, you know, take this book and try and identify plants or something like that. Or I'm going to go, you know, like go along. I've done this stuff in VR too, but just like, I'll just basically use this as like educational tour kind of stuff. Like I'll do the VR, like go to Chernobyl thing. Right. Or the Anne Frank house. Yeah.
That would be really great. Yeah. I would do the Anne Frank experience on the holodeck. I'm kind of surprised that they never got stuck in that. Like Moriarty not get stuck.
I don't think that would get past the network.
or like making instruments.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, it'd be really cool to like play a glass harmonica, you know, without having to set it up. A lot of people talk about sex on the holodeck, but here's the thing. When you turn that holodeck off, the cum just falls on the ground, I think.
Right? They've got polymers. There are coats where you can just mop that up. It's not going to streak.
Yeah, I don't think that it'll be hard to clean up. And they could make, you know, somebody has to clean up the Enterprise anyway.
Yeah.
Like there's got to be like a spooge mopper for the holodeck. But I would be embarrassed about leaving my seed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know.
You know.
Just clean up after yourself. It's campsite rules. Leave it better than you found it.
Yeah, that would be the way to do it. Yeah. I just, the idea of like, you know, similar to like what I talked about Fleshlight, like you get done with it and then you immediately have a disgusting and urgent chore.
Yeah.
You know, being like right after I've just recently had sex on a holodeck and be like, oh yeah, holodeck end program. And then just like, you know, it just falls down, is really unappealing to me. And you end like, okay, fuck, I had to go get the squeegee.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the pre-production and the post-production that always trips you up.
Yes. Yeah. I would, so I think that I would probably stick to normal masturbation if I were on, to answer your question.
Yeah.
Normal masturbation if I were on the Enterprise.
I don't know though. I'm pretty, you know, I don't swing too far out of the norm, you know, or vanilla. What's the right way to say this? if I could see if somebody had, let's say, a physically implausible fetish, something like that, the holodeck would
giantism.
Yeah.
Giant Troy dot. MPEG,
dot MPEG, yeah.
Yeah, dot MPEG, Loxwana, X Ferengi MPEG.
Yeah.
Dot giant.
Yeah, yeah. But if there, you know, if anybody had a physically implausible kink, it'd be fun to indulge in that, you know?
Yeah. good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing about I like about Star Trek is that it's a really profoundly unhorny show.
Yes.
Like, I mean,
there is Kirk, you know, we have to reckon with Kirk, right?
Specifically when I say Star Trek, I just mean Next Generation stuff. Yeah. Like Kirk is an unrepentant horn dog.
Yes.
You know, and Riker gets laid in the show, Star Trek, Next Generation, but the show itself is just like very like not horny about it, except when it gets horny and then it becomes the horniest thing in the world. Like if, I know you haven't seen this show, but you know, Troy, you know who that is?
Yeah. A counselor. Well, she's an empath. Yeah.
Yes. She has a mom. So she's very kind of stodgy, and she's the hottie on the show, mm-hmm. you know, Marina Sirtz. She has a mom named Lakshwana who shows up, who is like a horny elemental.
Okay.
And wants to fuck every man on the Enterprise. Like those episodes just turn into her like running her hand up Picard's leg and him getting increasingly like uncomfortable and beat faced. It's really good and weird. Like you just have this show that's like about people walking down hallways to completion and doing diplomacy, and then just like horny aunt, like the alien God's own wine aunt, shows up to try to seduce Patrick Stewart, who cannot handle it, and then hit on Riker, and like when she finds out her daughter's having sex with Riker, and she's like, "Oh yeah, good job, daughter! Like ride that fucking cowboy." It's just like everyone's like, "Ah, fuck, what do we do?"
She's just here from a different show. It sounds like
it's 100%.
Yeah,
and it was full of those guest stars. Like Q would come in and turn everything into like this mincing riddle. I love it so much.
Huh.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I just, I feel a little bit ashamed that I'm just not, I don't have as much catalog on Next Generation. It's just one of those things where, like, Next Generation was kind of in its heyday when I was a little bit too young to appreciate it, right? I think our age difference really accounts for a lot of that. When it was airing concurrently and it came on, it was not razzle dazzle enough for me, but like, you know, if it was 1995, I was 8, and also I was fascinated with Star Wars, you know, because that was getting the re-releases and stuff right there. I'm not making a direct comparison. It's just, you know, for that age, for my age and at that time, that's just kind of what I naturally gravitated towards. And then by the time it hit Netflix or streaming services, then it was just it's like the Buffy problem to a certain degree. There's just a lot of this, and it would be getting to know too many new characters, you know?
Well, so, it's a long series too. It's not like saying like, hey, watch all 5 seasons of Breaking Bad.
Right.
Like it's all 7 seasons of Star Trek, but each season is like 25 or 30 episodes.
Yeah. It's the old seasons. Know? Yeah.
Old thing. Yeah. I think also when I put this on the schedule and was just thinking about this game, I'd forgotten that you did not have Next Generation cachet.
No, it's fine.
I think that is illustrative. Like the Star Trek Star Wars thing is ultimately about razzle dazzle.
Yeah.
Like the gulf between those two things is whether you want, you know, over the top kind of action and lasers and stuff, whether that's what you want,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that is maintained into the movies and stuff like that. Like Star Trek, the motion picture, the first one is one of the most boring movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yep.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And you compare it with Star Wars, which is meant to be very exciting, big mm-hmm. orchestral score, you know, we enter our story partway in progress. Here's the drama.
Yes.
You know, versus like, boy, space would be peaceful.
Mm-hmm. You know? Space would be pretty peaceful, except for this one guy. His name's Khan. Makes big problems for us.
He's mad. But luckily we got rid of that guy.
Yeah.
You know, now it's just about, what if we go to a place and there's some kind of weird game, you know?
Yeah. And I have not kept track of like the modern, just the Discovery or Genesis or whatever new stuff is. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have very much interest. I think it's weird that they, with Next Generation, you know, they have all those characters, they all age, but Brent Spiner, Data, really wants to come back for mm-hmm. all that stuff, but you can't. Like Brent Spiner's aged a lot.
Yeah.
And Data looks real weird and puffy now. Not to like age shame Brent Spiner, but he does not look like an ageless android. He's like a Chuck E. Cheese animatronic.
Yeah.
left out to pasture, like just through the natural ravages of age that happen to a person.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's a, that's a real, that's a bad break is what we would call that in pool. Yeah. You know, it's a, it's a shame that the person most enthusiastic about it got the one role where it would be implausible.
Well, he still comes back. He just looks like a gross makeup monster.
They're doing a Pee Wee's Big Holiday, kind of stuff on him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's grody. Mm. Looking. Data on that show, if you didn't know this, he has an off switch.
I believe I've seen the off switch.
Guess where it's at. Say, oh, you've seen the off switch?
No. So I guess I don't, because like I know that he has an off switch because like that's a joke, just like, hey, we need to turn him off. I don't know, let's say taint.
There's one you can do it by opening his brain.
Okay.
Which some people do. There's also like a button between his shoulder blades. It feels like sometimes people just push on him there.
It's like where
it turns off.
It kind of seems like that would be hit all the time by like, I don't know, the backs of chairs.
Yeah. Chairs or like taking it, like laying down for a moment. Like, I guess he doesn't have to lay down, but he could be like, I believe, you know, I shall pretend to see what these humans call a nap. Yeah. And then like lays down and just immediately reboots himself.
Yeah.
He gets a cat at one point too. Me and Liv were trying to figure out where he gets the cat from. Like there's a subplot of him getting a cat named Spot, who's a very good cat. The cat in question, probably long dead by now. It's very sad. And him trying to learn what it's like to be a pet owner, you know, in his ongoing quest. But like, where do you get a cat on the Enterprise? Like, is it through the replicator? Is that like a clone cat? And if so, that opens up a lot of
questions. There are, can the replicator make a living thing?
It can make organic material.
Right? There's a distinction between those, Gary.
No, I know, but I'm saying it's not as big a distinction between, you know, a 3D printer and...
Is there another machine you can put the organic material in to give it a soul?
I think that this show raises those kind of questions.
Yeah.
Does not have a soul? You know, a little varmint. I don't know where his spot came from. I need to rewatch the whole series because all those little questions are now like keeping me up at night in a literal sense. Like,
yeah,
me and I spent a long time in bed trying to figure out where Spot came from without Googling it.
I remember watching it, you know, again, it would come on when I was real young, and I recognized LeVar Burton from reading Rainbow, you know, where he just a big part of my childhood, right? We would watch it in school. It was fun when it came out on PBS or whatever.
Beautiful and, man.
Like, yeah. Continues to this day. And you know, I thought like, oh, he's got that cool visor. That's neat. But like that character, it kind of felt like he wasn't allowed to be LeVar Burton through that, you know, to a degree.
Well, everyone's got that mute filter on him.
Yeah.
You know, he gets a couple like storylines. At one point he makes a holodeck version of the person who invented the ship and falls in love with her.
Okay.
Then the actual person who invented the ship shows up.
Uh-oh.
And that's awkward. And rightfully is like, hey, don't create robot versions of me to fall in love with.
Yeah.
Fucking weirdo.
Ethical problem. Geordi?
Yeah.
Come on.
It's pretty messed up. So that's the other thing about a holodeck is like, if you don't want to end up in a her situation.
No. Yeah, that would be a problem. Well, that's why you don't give your creations a face.
Yeah. If whatever horrible sex doll you've made in the holodeck, it should be like one of the beginner's guide things, just a cube that says sex instead of a head.
where do I oh, it's on the bottom.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
All right. This is sad. They also another thing on Star Trek I've just been thinking about a lot is there's this guy named Barkley who shows up on there. Who's a character, Matt Frewer, played by a character actor you'd recognize.
Yeah, yeah. Trash Can Man from the 90s Stand. Yeah.
Yeah. He goes crazy at some point, gets like superpowers, like a flower for Algernon thing.
Okay.
So there's a couple plots with him. Up until that point, though, it's like the one guy who is depressed and sucks on the Enterprise.
Okay.
Like everyone just like, this guy's fucking pathetic and he's real sad and nobody like helps him in a meaningful way. They just kind of like treat him like shit. It's incredible as well.
Even with Troy there, like
Troy does counseling sessions with him, but in my memory, she's real fed up with him.
Oh,
like there's a lot of scenes of her just being like, okay, Barkley, we'll see each other next week.
It's a little, oh gosh. Who's the pastor on The Simpsons? Reverend Lovejoy, yes. With Flanders.
Listen,
yeah.
Lady.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that they call him, Broccoli to tease him. How weird and quaint is that?
Come on.
Broccoli.
Broccoli.
And I'm like, what tiny kid's conception of the future? What an edgeless, limp depiction of this could ever be.
Huh. Yeah. Just would imagine a future where everybody's lame.
Yep. I love it. I love a lame future. Yeah. It's so good. I would do D&D in the holodeck.
Mm-hmm.
Replicator. That'd be great.
Oh, obviously.
I would love to just be able to choose a food and just say it and then the food appears.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then I don't like the bar. I think it's weird that there's one bartender and mm-hmm. there's one bar on this entire ship.
It's a big ship.
And everyone has to hang out there. It is a big ship. Like, yeah, I find that very strange.
Yeah.
Huh. Get to talk to Whoopi Goldberg if you're there, though.
Is she the bartender?
Yeah.
Huh.
Dinan. She's also an ancient alien race that has some kind of relationship to the Qs.
Huh. Okay. So are they not rivals, because obviously that's Picard, but like, does she get wrapped up in trying to stop Q whenever the ship has Qs?
If the ship had Qs and Whoopi Goldberg happened to be available.
Okay.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
A lot of times she just ignores whatever's happening. Like, she's got a bar to run. So Q will be up there fucking everything up.
Okay.
Or there'll be some virus or something, and Guinan just isn't involved.
Gotcha.
So.
Huh.
But yeah, she's not for Q. Yeah. And the show never got into where they had Lady Q or Baby Q.
it didn't run long enough for Baby Q to pop up.
Yeah, Baby Q did not. That's a later development. I think Baby Q might show up in Voyager. But I know Baby Q shows up in the novels.
Does it really? Yeah. You said that like a joke, yeah. But I've got no idea what's a joke and what's not.
Oh, no. Baby Q's real.
There's a
novel that me and my assistant listened to when I used to work at NIU.
Uh-huh.
IQ is the name of the novel about Picard, Q, and Data going to planets that represent the five stages of grief as he's on the run from his wife and daughter, I think. it's like Q goes to family court.
Well, I mean, that's not where villains go. That's where villains are made.
Yeah, it's the full circle.
You know? Oh my gosh. I don't want this episode to go forever, but you know what I would do on a on a holodeck?
What's that?
Falconry.
Yeah, you do that in real life, man.
I did it in real life. It's fun. I like to do more of it.
Why don't you just go do more of it in real life?
Well, that's costly.
Oh. Well, holodeck seems expensive.
Well, it's a perk. Like, do they pay for it?
Yeah, there's no coin slot.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I imagine it is a perk. I imagine it's like part of their benefits.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it'd be an important part of morale, right?
Yeah.
Getting
a certain amount of shore leave.
Yeah. Without it being actual people, which is a little bleak.
Yeah. We haven't talked about your falconry.
We have not.
Yeah, that was a good transition, and I forgot about your falconry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. So people want to know. This was a birthday gift, an early birthday gift that, and combined Christmas as well, because again it was costly. But Chris, knowing my fondness for birds and particularly birds of prey, was like, oh, this will be a good experience for you. So this was down in a suburb of Columbus, kind of in this big forest park where the Ohio School of Falconry has set up. And it was like a 3.5-4 hour session where we got to meet just a ton of birds of prey. I can do this in order. We got it, just talking about like, oh, the history of this, and, you know, breaking off into groups to like answer the question, like, when did falconry start and where, you know, it was ancient Japan. Okay. is the earliest known mention of proper falconry, using falcons to hunt. And that's what it is. You know, it is hunting. It is not just, the high of telling a bird what to do.
Sure. Yeah. Commanding the bird. You don't control the birds, maybe someday, but.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But then we got to see, like, there were a couple that we couldn't see. Like, I couldn't hold the peregrine falcon, but like, I got to wear the glove. You know, each one of us got to wear the falconry glove, big thick one, and we got a chance to. I met an owl. Was the first bird that we got to hold, because it was used to people. Like, it was a rescue that was raised by the instructor's daughter. It was a Eurasian eagle owl. Go ahead and look those up. It's one of the biggest owls, but it was only 5 pounds. Called Henson because he looks like a Muppet. Okay. And just, God, the claws on this thing, just right there, and completely cool just to sit on your hand as long as you held him up above your shoulder.
What happened if you lowered him below your shoulder?
He would feel insecure and he would like put his wings out.
You would start a blog.
If you're real anonymous, just
he'd feel insecure and go on Tumblr.
No, he put his wings out and it'd be a whole big thing. You'd have to like either raise it up, because it just, if it's down like that, he feels like he's falling, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it was there was only one kid there, which is weird. Most of the people were either like around my age or like older. There were like several people who were like 50 or 60, you know.
Okay. That's a luxury thing.
Yeah. 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 But including a whole cast of birders, who were there, who had come from all over. Like there was one person there from like as far away as like Minnesota, which was weird. Apparently there's a thing, there's like a meme in bird circles. Are you on team hawk or team bunny?
Okay.
Are you on just basically like,
are you predator? Or are you prey? Is this like the devouring sheep party from Deathloop?
Kinda. I mean, it's like, which do you have more sympathy for? Like, do you think it rules that a hawk will kill a bunny, or are you sad that a bunny will die? which I don't understand. But it was really like it was talking about just like, oh, like what are you on? Are you team hawk or team bunny? And the cast of birders, these very excellent middle aged women, they were split. You know.
That's fascinating. That seems like that's a real way to get into some like real wretched, you know, eugenicsy shit.
Yeah, a little
almost,
bit.
You know, like, yeah, I don't care for that.
No.
I suppose I just don't want to think about it.
I'm of the opinion that it doesn't matter what I think. Hawk's gonna eat a. Hawk's gonna eat a rabbit because hawk's gotta live. A lot of rabbits are gonna get away, not get got. They're gonna have kids. It's kind of like, I don't know.
Then rabbits are gonna in turn hunt plants.
The trees feel pain, yes, but in a way that is very hard to care about.
The plants will hunt the sun, like it doesn't, and then they'll go hunt up some water. Like,
yeah,
it's just a circle, you know.
It was just a really weird thing to imagine somebody being concerned about. You know, like why would you? Like if I see a bunny, I will look at it and think, I really hope that a hawk doesn't come down and get this good
that
boy.
Specific bunny.
Yeah, that specific bunny, because I made friends with it.
Yeah, but bunny hawks eating bunnies in general is abstract.
Yeah,
it's like food at like a restaurant. You don't want to know too much about it.
Right. I don't want them to come up and do the Portlandia thing of telling me its name. You know, I don't want to go see the farm. Yeah.
Yeah, I never eaten anything that I know the name of in terms of like food.
Yeah,
like I've never been like, this chicken is John, and then like that chicken gets slaughtered and I eat that chicken later.
Right.
I've never picked out a lobster. Like I wouldn't do that.
No. I just
have you stopped eating hawk after this?
Gary, come on. I gotta live my life, okay?
Yeah, I'm not trying to be judgy. I would no one to blame you if you're still eating owl.
Oh my gosh, they got those meaty claws, dude. You just gotta pickle those bad boys
crack them open like a lobster claw.
I'm just looking at my notes here. Did you know that people who raise hawks, oftentimes they will be called on? Hawks are a part of the wedding industry.
Okay.
There are wedding ring delivery hawks.
Ooh, they don't just scalp in-laws. Like,
if they're threatened,
they don't just kill the caterer before the bill comes.
You have to pay extra for that, so it's kind of a wash.
So they can deliver a wedding ring, eh?
Yeah, they can deliver a wedding ring. And like, so the coolest part, you know, we went and walked out in the woods along a path, and we had there were two Harris hawks, which are these really smart hawks who hunt in packs. The one who we spent the most time with was Irwin, and then there was his sister Raby. Not rabies like the disease, but R-E-I-B-I. Like what was really neat is like when you go falconing, they kind of follow you around like cats to a degree.
Okay.
Like in your house, when you go like from your bedroom to your living room, the cats will probably just kind of like lounge, you know, like follow you. Like, I'm going to just hang out here because I just want to be around you as you're walking around. They're not like on a leash or anything, and they're not always on your arm until you send them out. What they're doing is you're walking and they are either following behind you or ahead of you down the path, like going from perch to perch looking for prey. Right.
Okay.
And so it's us. And it was real cool just like to walk through this woods and then just follow this hawk that was in turn following us, jumping from like place to place. And we would reach a clearing, and the instructor had just this bag of chick parts of, you know, of like baby chicks. And we would hold up the glove, and he would put the little snack up on our glove, and then he'd whistle, and then the hawk would fly down and alight on your, take the little giblet and alight on your hand. And it would be like, honestly, a pretty magical feeling. If I'm being honest, you're a goddamn beastmaster when this thing flies down from the sky and lands right on your hand.
Yeah. I imagine that being pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then also you get to pet them.
You do not get to pet them. You do not touch a bird.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I'm no longer interested in doing this.
So that's a thing. The guy, the instructor kept on saying like, yes, they are bonded to you, but that's because they, you know, they're bonded to their keepers, but that's because they trust that you are associated with food and that you will not take their food. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. You, like a big part of the falconry training is, you know, just like they will hunt something and they will grab something, and then you offer them your own meat in return to like grab it, you know.
Okay.
And you take that in turn, and that becomes a treat for later. Yeah. So you can
switch them.
Yeah, you bait and switch them. Yeah, but like, just to maybe made it very clear, these birds will not love you. Like a bird cannot, because that is just not the relationship they had with their parents. Right, their relationship with their parents was not necessarily for comfort; it was for food. Whereas like with mammals, you know, when you have a cat, they are mimicking their relationship with their parent with you. Right. So, yeah. You know, you don't touch a bird on its body because that is either associated as a threat or as sexual, you know.
Okay.
Some birds you can like touch on their head, you know, like that's fine. If you're willing to risk getting beaked, you know. And if you try and touch their claws, they were very clear. Do not touch the claws, because they will associate that with prey and they'll grab onto you. And you know, these claws are strong enough to, you know, crack skulls open. So maybe a bad idea.
And you've chosen to hitch your wagon to this loveless monster.
Yes.
These horrible critters that cannot love you and will not.
Because they're majestic.
That is some real simp behavior to like go all in for majesty like that, man.
I am white knighting the majesty.
Birds, like, I didn't realize birds were incapable of love. That's some Patrick Bateman shit. I don't know that I can get down with that.
They're incapable of love as we understand it, you know.
It's like a plant.
It's a plant that does cool nature shit, you know.
Yeah, I could see watching one of those from a distance. The fact that I cannot be friends with these things has legitimately put a little bit of a damper.
But it's mutual. I mean, I should say it is mutual trust. They will follow you. Like, they want to be around you.
Like Everlast. or Uncle Cracker, rather.
Yeah.
He's the one who will follow you. Whoops.
No, he wants you to follow him because everything will be all right.
Shit. He's the opposite of a bird.
Yeah. But you know, like it is that they will opt to be around you and they will follow you through the woods and stuff. Like I cannot say how cool that is, you know?
Yeah.
And,
I guess I can see it. I like being friends with animals.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's the kind of like relationship or trust, like how your cat will like sleep around you because they trust you. Right. In the wild, a cat, you know, an animal would never fall asleep if it didn't know you because you might present a danger. And
yeah,
you know, with the hawk, they will, I mean, so when the walk was over and we were walking back, we had these two hawks and, I got to carry Irwin, back to the, mm-hmm. Back to the pavilion. And he was just kind of there and I was, you know, it was this, you know, semi long walk down this trail holding this, hawk on my arm and just like having this pretty intense, like bonding kind of experience, looking at him, look around, you know, and like just locking eyes with this thing and saying, what's going on in there? Basically kind of like Forrest with the bearded dragon in Review.
Yeah. 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 The weird thing is that like a lot of times with that stuff, I was talking about this with or Jeremy or Will recently with horses.
Yeah,
where you're like, what's going on in there? And it feels like it feels so close to nothing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, and it makes it kind of scary. Like I've watched a falconry demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm playing up my dismissal of your falconry.
I know.
The jokes.
Yeah.
I genuinely would be interested in this stuff, obviously, because I'm also a nature dork.
Mm-hmm.
But with that looking into the eye stuff, that will chill me to the bone sometimes. Like in a weird way that very few things will.
Yeah.
You know, like I can imagine having a bird on my arm, looking into its eyes and just being like, I can't, this is an alien being.
Yeah.
In like a very real sense.
Yeah.
Like I cannot understand how this thing conceives.
I have those moments. Like one time I stepped out of my house, like to go get in my car to go to work. This was in Cincinnati. So kind of in the middle of the city and out behind my house, I thought somebody had put a decoy deer, you know?
Okay.
Like similar times. No, it was a real ass buck. It was a buck, that was just standing in my backyard of the house that I rented a floor of. And I just stood there looking at it and just like there was this and looking in the eyes, okay, which one of us is gonna go? Are you gonna trample me or are you gonna stomp on my car? And no, it jumped over the back fence. But like anytime I get one of those kind of things where you lock eyes and try and see inside of it, it kind of gives a little bit more context for humanity to me, you know?
Yeah.
It's like
I can see that
by seeing something else or by projecting my own into it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Like it's real weird. It's a very, humbling and, right-sizing experience.
Yeah.
You know,
but I can't recommend it enough. And I learned about a whole bunch of, like bird sanctuary, kind of things that have similar places. So I'm very curious, to go and, check some more out, this spring.
It looks awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I would love that.
Yeah.
That is, I will look around. We have an Audubon Society around here that I have, done. And that's real fun.
Yeah.
You get to see some birds. You don't get to hold them.
No.
But you do get to see them.
Mm-hmm. You know, and also it's kind of a, you know, because it is so ancient, you know, going back thousands and thousands of years, like it's, one of those like, oh yeah, like this is older than a lot of forms of ways that people got food that I might know of. Like,
yeah, so it's legitimate historical value as well.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things where like, yeah, now it's mostly done for for entertainment, right? Like it's a leisure activity, it's a luxury activity, but it is one of those things, you know, kind of like shooting a bow and arrow, where like it's kind of in a way this weird communing with the past kind of thing, just the chain of history, mm-hmm. reaching back kind of deal. I don't know. This was a good experience. It's making me feel like all philosophical when I talk about it, which I understand is not appealing, but
yeah. No, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It should, right? Like it's literally a, horizon broadening thing.
Yes.
you know, in a literal sense. That is the appeal of something like this,
mm-hmm.
is broadening your horizons.
Yeah.
Making you think in different ways.
I did ask, like, how many people come here to, like, do an immersion therapy, like, address their fears kind of thing. Apparently not a common, sure. not common.
Yeah.
It didn't say it doesn't happen, but, like, it just, it's not something I kind of half expected that to be the thing, but no, everybody was into it because of the same just dorky. I also remarked about this to Chris as I was leaving, like, how can something feel so cool, but also be the dorkiest thing in the goddamn world?
It is very dorky, you know, but in a way, like in a Star Trek way.
Yeah.
Did Chris enjoy it?
So Chris didn't stick around. He dropped me off. He came for the tail end, but kind of like stayed away. Just because he didn't want to get free. It's one of those things where like they used to only charge for, participants. And viewers, you know, people who are just observing could come in for free just to learn, but people were abusing that. It would be like six people and they would pay for one. They would pay for one participant, but they would swap out. And it's like, it's a real dick move, to try and scam that blah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, you don't have to win every encounter you have with life.
Yeah.
And get the cheapest price for anything. Some things, you know, pay for the thing.
Yeah, like don't take advantage of this incredibly earnest like staff of people who are here because they want to share this knowledge. If you think it's cool enough to go do, you think it's interesting. If it's interesting, you should support it. You know. Yeah. Also, if you like the show, you can go to patreon.com/suckfeedtv.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing. Yeah, but I legitimately agree with that.
Yeah.
Like you know, you like something, you should support it. So if you like us, please support us. If you can, it's okay. Don't read too much into this, but in general, don't need to try to scam your way out of us.
No.
You can do that at patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can also become a patron there and support us and suggest episodes and get bonus episodes and all that jazz. We're recording for a little while. Little brain blasted here, but you know what to do. You listen to podcasts.
Yes, you have. You get bonus content, leave ratings or reviews. You know the deal. Go make friends with the bird.
Go to Patreon. You can leave a rating or review, tell your friends. Just get stuck in this loop. You know what to do.
You know what to do. You know.
Tell your friends, talk about us on social media. You know what to do. Patreon.com.
Sorry, I was pulling up the thread with the end, with the outro kind of deal. We also lost a little bit of audio there, so we had to do
some technical times. It's time for grandpas to go to bed. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Until next time, swap feet picks with interested parties.